Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Black Power, Black Power. We want to welcome y'all to another show.
Black Power.
In defense of people. Okay,
Black
go
Power,
ahead, Quint.
Black Power, Black Nation. We're tuned in to In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Nat Turner, your co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and myself, Engineers on the Ones and Twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina. Call in every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Again, that's 845-277-9266. This is the People's Radio. Press the number one to participate. Tonight's topic, Black August is Black History. We also have our host on the line, National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner. Can you hear me, comrade? Black Power.
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you loud and clear right on. Can you hear me? I
can hear you, Black Power.
Okay. All right, right on.
I can hear you loud and clear, comrade.
That's what's up. I want to say, you know, Black Power, you know what I'm saying? All power to the people. You know, you want to welcome those who are listening, you know, to another show, In Defense of People Radio. Sister said, this is a political education platform, or a platform where we can use to politically educate our people. What we understand as politicizing our people, we feel that that is the most proficient, it's the most realistic angle to take to deal with our collective issues in this part of the world, being the descendants of civilized African people who were kidnapped and brought here by the force of violence and made to serve the ruling whites. And the whites in general, being below them in the hierarchy of the slave system, the physical slave system. And we're the descendants, we're their prodigy, you know, who have been left, you know, here in this country. As a result of that, we're the present day blood of those who gave of their blood, sacrifices, and, you know, suffered all types of inhumane treatments on the part of the white folk who claim to have been Christians. As a matter of fact, who claim that before they began to kidnap African people from the continent and came here, and claimed that they were bringing civilization, Christianity, and their stock and trade commerce here to what they referred to as the New World, labeling and, you know, descriptions and adjectives and whatnot. You know, you learn these things in school, in English class, you know, labeling and how important that is. And, you know, to refer to this part of the world as the New World. Of course, you have to take that and put that in proper perspective. It's the New World as far as the so-called Caucasian branch of, you know, humanity is concerned. There were already black and brown indigenous people here long before the Europeans, thousands and thousands and thousands of years before. These Europeans, so it has been an old world for the indigenous black and brown people who were here from the top of Canada to the bottom of Chile. And, you know, that situation, the material conditions back then is what has led to the material conditions today. The residue of 500 years of European decadence, colonialism, white supremacy. You can also use the term, you know, Eurocentrism, you know, the Eurocentrists who have based the world off the white ideal of understanding history, religion, of course, politics, economics, and whatnot, militarism, and so forth, to defend and uphold, maintain, or to upkeep, or to keep continually perpetuating their white ideals, their structure of things, as far as interacting with other human beings who don't look like them. And there could never be, we did a show called There Could Never Be, pretty much without a Dr. Frankenstein, Frankenstein. And so, we tried to hit on the root knowledge. So we're going to get, don't get too caught up in a lot of the fruit knowledge, because that's been made to be the subject or the predicate in the various, whatever you want to call discussions and whatnot, gatherings and all this kind of shit, where people get together and want to discuss racism and equality and justice, all that kind of stuff. Without looking at a thorough look, or taking a thorough look through the eyes and experience of black people, just the fact alone that black people have gone from one label to the next, from, Negro, the nigger, the black American, the African American, and whatnot. Afro-American, African-American. They're those of us who clearly state that we're Africans. We just here in America as a result of a situation that took place, a very brutal experience. And as we've come along through our experience, we in a liberation struggle, to take back our own lives, place our own lives back into our own hands. You dare to struggle, you dare to win. There's no victory without sacrifice. This civil rights thing is a get up to turn us away from a larger, a bigger view of the world. In terms of our human rights violations, people of African descent. Over the years, we've had numerous struggles. We've had eras came and went. And those eras that have come and went have been passed on in modern day times. And the different ideologies, the different attitudes, the different sets of what have you, quasi-religious, religious, so forth, political, we believe people's political party, we believe that the political aspect or the relationship, what we refer to with the state, is as deep as you can, as you can get it, as you can take it, as far as like understanding our problems, the things that underlay all the different things that plague us, and how to alleviate those problems. And we feel that the liberation process is the most practical. There's been those that have come in our midst over the past at least 100 years, 115, 120 years, and have, dabbled in sort of different perspectives on our conditions, and it's something that has to be really you have to really delve into it to understand the shit, but it's some confusion or some uncertainty, and some of that's done on purpose. Some of it's done in a sense where there's been certain of us who have come along and have established ourselves in a certain sense. On the streets, we refer to them as cliques, birds of the same feather flock together. And all of this is the colonialized mind. All of this is taking on the minds of the colonizer. And the mind of the colonizer says what is to keep the structure intact, using whatever's there necessary at their disposal, at the state's disposal. And if that includes some black people who look just like us, to use them at their disposal to keep black people basically in the same conditions of subservience, dependence on the state. It's like jumping out of the jail into a jam. I say all that to say this. There's an attitude that, you know, naturally arises after so long, after so much. And this is a historical phenomenon. You know, around the world, other oppressed people historically have been through the pretty much the same conditions. One of political oppression, economic disparity, economic disenfranchisement, economic neglect, which, you know, creates material conditions that lead to hardcore realities or concrete realities. And this is the concrete reality that we face collectively every day out in these so-called mean streets. The Black Panther Party has thus established a particular type of thinking along revolutionary lines. And even to the point of labeling themselves, and this labeling was due, you know, to the experience, the collective experience of Black people. For instance, the collective experience with Black people and the police, with the Black Panther Party learned to crystallize in the thought process after a careful examination, up close and personal examination, and scrutiny and observance. And so therefore, through that experience, the Black Panther Party came away with the mind state of the pig. Making a parallel analysis or comparative method or comparative analysis between the pig and the panda, you know, the real animal, or the filthy animal. So the Black Panther Party had correlated the treatment of the police meted out to Black people similar to the pig. And this is how the police got to be called a pig. And so it was no reactionary type of thing or just some wild imagination or rantings or whatever, some reckless thought process and just slanging around words unconsciously. These things do again, you know, experience, and the experience has been tallied up, so to speak, and it is a conclusion that was drawn, a conclusion that concluded, like Chairman Fred, leader of the Illinois chapter Black Panther Party, you used to say, you know, conclusion that concluded, explanation that explained. So this is the wing or the factor within the Black liberation struggle, the gist of it. Other organizations during the 60s at that time, you know, that had been, you know, projected outwardly or onto Black people. And so to stay cleverly, wisely, would pick and choose which groups that they would feel most comfortable with, even when they weren't comfortable with them in the first place, because there was an attempt to alter some things, not a total attempt to change the structure. And what do I mean by that? To alter some things, and this altering of things is what we refer to as civil rights. You know, the alteration of, you know, the use of public facilities, being taxpaying people at the same time, being denied access to public utilities or facilities or whatever that taxpaying people, you know, pay for the upkeep and stuff. And so this had been made the linchpin. It had been made the, you know, like the, you know, the eyes on the prize, you know. And this is how the civil rights struggle movement had become to take, you know, a mainstream effect psychologically. And so therefore, you know, the civil rights and so forth, you know, people today, you know, civil rights movement, civil rights activists and whatnot, you know, these terms and labels. And the Black Panther Party had went beyond civil rights. The Black Panther Party said, yes, civil rights, but the larger objective was human rights. And so due to that, being a Black revolutionary organization, you know, had become public enemy number one, according to Jim Hoover, that they become the most, you know, dangerous threat to the internal security of this so-called government, you know. And in the midst of that, in the process, there were other brothers and sisters who had joined in this Black liberation struggle. And part of that Black liberation struggle had came, you know, with sacrifice, and a particular type of sacrifice where those who had become political targets due to the counterintelligence program politicized, and those who were unpoliticized who ended up in what is referred to as the prison system. So as a result of that, you have with today political prisons that this government still doesn't recognize yet. It uses its media to project itself onto the rest of the world as a democracy, and that those countries that don't align with their definition, understanding, or version of what their standard democracy is, these countries are labeled regimes, dictatorships, authoritarianism, and all this kind of stuff, totalitarianism, and that as a result of that, you know, these countries had taken political prisoners, and these prisoners are the individuals who had been on the right side of history, or they were opposed to their government, to their leaders, and whatnot. And America, you know, this will always be the world's greatest hypocrite, the accusers of the countries. And it's no coincidence that the countries that they label is today the very country that now has challenged or is challenging America for you know, international supremacy or international prowess, such as Russia, Iran, China, North Korea, and even India, the countries that had long been placed under the rule of thumb, for the most part, of British imperialism, and now American imperialism, what we refer to as an Anglo-American establishment. And so as a result of that, you know, again, you know, here in within this jurisdiction, the prison system. And the prison system is pretty much used as a further strategy of containment. And because of the political conditions, the political relationship is an antagonistic relationship between Black people and the state, or antagonistic relationship between the Black man and his government. And I don't say that to leave sisters out, because we never forget that the sisters have more problems than anybody in this country. If you were to take these problems and list them and write them down as far as, how can I say this, sort of like these isms or whatnot, you can look at it from that perspective. So you take Black people into consideration, Black men don't have to deal with sexism. Black women do. But Black men and Black women have to deal with classes, and Black men and Black women have to deal with racism. So Black women, if you were to count that, then their problems would end up being more than anybody else's or other women of color, or non-white women in this country. In particular, you know, the Latino faction, or, you know, branch of the so-called races or the population within this country, you know. So as a result of that, you know, it's an antagonistic relationship, an irreconcilable one. There were those who dared to struggle, who dared to win, became targets, as I said. And so inside the prison system, there were those who were being held captive, prisoners of war, political prisoners of conscience, and so forth, new African freedom fighters. And recently, we've lost one of our greatest new African freedom fighters, Mutula Shakur, who some may recognize in the last name due to the presence or the impact of Tupac Shakur. You know, and even his own mother, Afeni Shakur, would become, you know, one of the members of the New York 21. And so as a result of that, from the 60s on forward, in the late 60s, the early 70s, there were those who were being held captive as prisoners of conscience. while at the same time, there were those who have been herded into the prison system because of the inherent contradictions of capitalism, because of the nature of capitalism itself. It has to be clearly understood that we can never be making up shit, or could never be, you know, at this point, at this stage, you know, trying to persuade people, our people, to look at capitalism and the shortcomings of black people, whatnot, as an excuse. It is what it is. This is no mirage. Things don't happen just right straight out of a vacuum, or just jump up out of the sea with no cause. You know, a hurricane or a tsunami, like the tsunami that hit Japan. That water became a particular force due a phenomenon that creates tsunamis, right? So it just didn't rise up out of the sea with no predicate. So this is how we see capitalism. We see capitalism as let me say it like this. On the part of the capitalist, profit motive, you know, is their religion, and capitalism is their Bible. And so because of that, the so-called white ruling class, you know, this hierarchy, the white ruling class, you know, some of us may understand that as, you know, the 1% or whatever, shit like that, and so forth. And then, you know, you have, you know, those who are under them, the so-called upper class, and then you have the middle class, and, you know, middle class whites, and there's, you know, a small, tiny minority from the black population, you know, that may fit in. So just to give you an idea of the structure. But at the bottom, you have the so-called proletariat, this Russian term, and the lumpen proletariat. The proletariat is what they like to refer to as the blue-collar worker, you know, working-class people. And the lumpen proletariat, of course, is those who are scum of the earth, the unemployed, those who are trying to get it by hook or crook, those who are into various forms of what the state referred to as crime, committing crimes. And we say that politics and crime go hand in glove. The system of capitalism is criminal itself. Because people get shit twisted when they get the thing, and they're gonna come to America and they're gonna prosper, they're gonna open up a business, they're gonna be an entrepreneur and whatnot, you know, and come here, you know, to the land of paradise and whatnot. It's near fiction. It can be orchestrated, it can be put together mechanically, methodically, the will and oppression, you know, to the rest of the world. And this is why people around the world, you know, believe in that shit. You know, their condition have been eroded. Not by coincidence, not by, you know, it's not even an accident. It's not even an accident. It's by design. And this is what capitalism does. This is the system of capitalism on the imperialist stage. And so due to that, it's only inherent that there will be what the state referred to as crime. And, you know, some of us refer to as street activities. Even NASA, you know, the space program. Even in their own document where they talk about, you know, their ambitions for the future and whatnot. And even their own document that they know that, you know, our ambitions for the future and what we, you know, seek to do in our endeavor, we know that it's going to create more crime. So we understand, you know, from Wall Street, you know, to the projects. From Wall Street to projects, they glued together, you know, by the hip. Could not do without the other. You see, and what I mean by that, the ghetto cannot do without Wall Street. Wall Street cannot do without the ghetto. In order for Wall Street to function, you have to have the ghetto. You have to have poor people. You have to have it. Don't take my word for it. Take a good look. Delve into it yourself and see what it's all about. You know, on these plantation jobs, you know, people who work in the service industry, being ripped off every week, every other week, every month, every paycheck. You know what I'm saying? And this is what it is. This is what it is. And so this technology shit driving up crime even more. You know, science and technology, you know, we drive it up even more. And so this is what, you know, the pain of people. You understand why the prison system is necessary. You know what I'm saying? And then the prison system is going to a higher stage in terms of a private company, a private corporation, a private business, such as WAC and HUD, Corrections Corporation of America. You know, Correction Corporation of America. As a prison system, the privatization of prison. And so when you accumulate such a massive population, a prison population, then that prison population necessarily becomes nothing more, no less than a commodity. Each individual. And this is why we refer to it as prisoners of war. You know, we don't say jail, we say concentration camp. We don't say bond or bail, we say ransom. We don't say arrest, we say kidnapping. You know, it is what it is. And this is due to our relationship, this is from our experience. And there's even been those who will try to satisfy their Lord and Masters, who allow them access to material comfort and luxury by reinforcing these terms of jail and arrest and bind and other type of shit. You know what I'm saying? But it's due to that you have the unpoliticized, who have become such a massive, huge, massive proportion of the population. What is it, 60%, somewhere up in there is a prison population, you know, black people. You see what I'm saying? And so you tie the two of them together. You have what's called prisons of conscience, unpoliticized prisons of war. And so in the late 60s, you had one George Jackson, who had been one of those unpoliticized prisons of war, with sentenced to one to life on the gas station robbery, 1961. You know, and so you receive a sentence from one to life. In there, while in there, George Jackson, he didn't let time do him. You know, he did time. And so in the process, George Jackson had said that he had met Mile and Che, you know, and Goran, you know, Ho Chi Minh. And he had met these brothers, you know, these revolutionaries, cabal. And what he meant was he met them, consciously. They become from an unconscious, unpoliticized brother to a politicized prison of conscience. And it is George Jackson who had become instrumental in the prison system. His name had got around. He had the ability, once he began to fully understand what capitalism is and what it does, pretty much what I had stated, to explain what it's all about. This is no mirage, again, or the makeup shit. The streets is the results of it. The streets is the reality. There are those of us who live in the bubble who think that's reality. Those of us live in Alice in Wonderland and the world of fiction, and they swear that that's reality. You see what I'm saying? In reality, hits them in the face. Whether they have to even try to pass reality, put a muzzle on, like the muzzle they use on horses and stuff like that. To pretty much control the horse, bend the horse to their will. But it was the likes of George Jackson, you know, and at some point, George Jackson had become recruited into the Black Panther Party as the National Field Marshal. A lot of us, even in the consciousness of it, may not be fully aware of that. While in the prison system, he had begun to correctly assess it, and the racism, the classism, and whatnot. To the point where he's looking at it as a control factor, a control mechanism. But at the same time, these are the brothers who are potential soldiers in a war against them. In Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh and his right-hand man, Bo Nguyen Giac, you spell it G-I-A-P, because, Vietnamese, they'll have letters in their name, the pronunciation don't necessarily go like you see the letter. You see what I'm saying? But anyway, Ho Chi Minh's right-hand man, Bo Nguyen Giac, had developed the same theory, the same thought process by analyzing you know, the condition, the situation in which the Vietnamese people had found themselves collectively. And so therefore, the Vietnamese people collectively are suffering from French imperialism. That was the holdings of the French. You know, so you can have holdings. There's companies, you know, so-and-so holdings and stuff like that. You know, and this is what they mean. So the landmass of Vietnam was looked at as a holding on the part of the French, the French version of European imperialism. And so the Vietnamese people under Ho Chi Minh and Vo Nguyen Giap, he assessed it. So if it's people's war, then it would be people's army. You know, if it's a people's war, then it's people's army. And so this is what they developed. This is what they perfected. They defected what was referred to as a Tet Offensive, a guerrilla campaign that the Europeans couldn't muster. And all that high-class technology and whatnot, flying machines and all this different type of shit, whatever, you know, any advancement in science thus far up, you know, into the 60s and whatnot, the 70s. But it made an assessment. This is what was the genius about Vo Nguyen Giap. And so George Jackson, by understanding the Vietnamese people's struggle, understanding the political arena and the thoughts of Ho Chi Minh and Vo Nguyen Giap's assessment of things, a very critical viewpoint, a realistic point. It was far from utopian, had nothing to do with the abstract. So this is what George Jackson understood, see. And so in the prison system, George Jackson knew that there were types like him, you know, and that they can be converted the same way that he had become converted. And this is we can say the hallmark of Black August in the prison system. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who's a political prisoner to this day, he's a Panther member of the Philadelphia chapter. And Mumia Abu-Jamal assessed Black August all the way back to the Haitian Revolution, you know. And it's no coincidence at all, period, you know, that things take place, you know, with Black people in this country. And this month of August is very instrumental. Historic moments that have taken place in this month in the Black liberation struggle. And this Black liberation struggle is not some isolated incident or some isolated thing. There's what's called Black History Month. And Black History Month is a scene nationally around the country. It is promoted by the same people who have created the conditions in the first place in order for us to get around to having a Black History Month. You know what I'm saying? And it's so, it's, in other words, it's very Hegelian. The corporations, you know, who pour finances and resources into the Black History Month strategy, and its limitations, of course, is being in control of what should come out of that, you know, the commercials and whatnot, you know, and stuff like the advertising. So it's very Machiavellian. And so, but it's recognized. And this was the whole purpose of this show tonight. Black August is Black history. It's not some wild delusional, you know, some thing on the part of a handful of madmen and women who hate whitey. You know, a handful of madmen and women who talk about guns and whatnot. You know, quoting Chairman Mao's "Road to Freedom comes goes through the barrel of a shotgun." Even though Chairman Mao had proved that point, he had you know, developed that thought, and he had proved there was no peaceful exiting on the part of the French, nor the Americans. you see. There had been this concept of divide and conquer, such as what is known presently today as North Vietnam and South Vietnam. There was never a North Vietnam and South Vietnam before the Europeans. You know, so you see North Vietnam, South Vietnam, or North Korea and South Korea. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, these are correct assessments. These are correct assessments. And so we made the correct assessment that Black August is Black history. Our children, our youth, our teenagers in these schools, we refer to as a public school system, it is their history. It is their lineage. It is their right to know their full history, or the Black experience. And I think some shit now that's going on. I think it's some of our Black television or Black whatever, something like that, you know. But anyway, you know, it's our children's right, you know, to know about Black August, you know, and to know the things, the history of Black August and how Black August come about, you know, due to George Jackson, you know, being instrumental in the prison system. And George Jackson had, you know, while in there, he had begun to influence other brothers. They had begun to have a political education class. They had begun to even have a training class where they would train in self-defense. George Jackson had learned the art of self-defense and whatnot, you know, and it began to influence other brothers who were there. These brothers instinctually know why they're there, but they, you know, wasn't able to overcome the conditions that they've inherited. And so George Jackson started with referred to as the Black Guerrilla Family, the BGF, him and a couple of other comrades in San Quentin. They were initially known as the Black Family. I think before that, you know, they referred to themselves as the Rat Pack. And these was, you know, Big Jake Lewis, you know, W.L. Nolan, you know, in San Quentin, you know. And these are the brothers who had become, you know, the nucleus, and they were able to start raising brothers conscious level. And of course, dealing with the prison conditions, you know, they had went from understanding themselves as being convicts who had committed crimes where they had committed infraction, you know, against the people. And George Jackson had got them to correct that. It got them to understand that it wasn't W.L. Nolan, the people versus W.L. Nolan. It was the state versus W.L. Nolan. It was George Jackson himself. He had put it in a proper perspective that it was not the people versus George Jackson. It was the state versus George Jackson. It is this type of consciousness. It is this type of consciousness, you know, that began to alarm the San Quentin pigs, you know, his ability to raise those who were what we would say in the underworld, in the grave, you know. And so this whole month, but just to give some type of understanding, you know, how the Black August evolved. You know, brothers who in the 70s, you know, had learned from the influence of George Jackson, and to keep the spirit of George Jackson alive. George Jackson was assassinated, was a political murder, you know. And it's so much, man. it's so much. We can, you know, we'll try to, you know, this whole month, you know, to, you know, give a, you know, to dedicate, you know, these shows to Black August, because all too many times there's been, you know, this notion of you know, people who died, who sacrificed their lives, and all too many times, our youth are always told that Martin Luther King died, Medgar Evers was murdered, you know, and so forth. You know, Malcolm X is mentioned, you know, also, but there's this perception, you know, that, you know, civil rights leaders lost their lives, made the sacrifice for black people, you know, to be where we're at thus far, you know, and that's done methodically on purpose, you know, and we should expect it. Because when you get to look at ideologies or ideological from the different organizations and different groups, will make sense. But George Jackson, so-called prison uprising, and you know, be very careful. With some of the the way these stories are being told, but August 21st, 1971, the political murder of George Jackson, speaking out for what had become known as the San Quentin Six. You know, these brothers was in San Quentin, and as a result of that, George Jackson himself, outside of that penal colony, he become affiliated with two brothers, and they had become known as the Solidarity Brothers, George Jackson, Fleetwood Drumgoole, and John Cluche, who were accused of the murder of a prison guard, John the Pig Mills, on January 16, 1970. And as a result of that, led to the courthouse rebellion in Marin County, California, August 7, 1970, by his young, we refer to his young man child, Jonathan Jackson, his little brother, who attempted to free the brothers, which is what led to the shootout in the parking lot, and where number of persons were killed in that gun battle, including Jonathan Jackson. So, when you look at that, there's this notion that all of this violence and this reckless violence, or this reactionary violence, or some have tallied it up as suicide, there are those who are defeated. And what we mean by defeated, there are those who see the white man as invincible. You know, they look at the white man and all the technology, and all the time, you know, that these white men spend in the lab, financing in the lab, from the military to medicine and whatnot, you know, the space program or what have you, and see them as invincible. And so therefore, we now must rely on God or some agent of his to emerge on the cloud and come and rescue us, to come and save us. And so those are persons who are defeated, you know. Give me 1 second here. One second. All right. Yeah. But anyway, so this slave mentality, and of course it's been inherited. It's been inherited and stuff. But it's those experiences that led to Black August. I want to mention this other brother named Qatari Golden. The death of Qatari Golden, August 1st, 1978. But we don't believe that none of this is coincidence at all, period, you know, at all. You know, this is a month that we take as a part of our historical struggle. In this country, and as we said, this is our collective history. This is no sidebar. On the brothers who made sacrifices, who understood what sacrifice was and what sacrifice is, still is today. And then once again, this is what we mean by Black August is Black history. It has been rather tragic that we can let other forces steer our history, or when it comes to persons in history in the past, we've all gone through some type of brainwashing at some point, at some stage, but it's always been about human rights. It's always been about human rights. Civil rights fall under that, we are in a pitch battle. This is war. This is a war on African people on various fronts, and it's because of the likes of San Quentin Six side of there, brothers Jonathan Jackson, George Jackson, and let me add this. George Jackson had become involved with people now I know as Professor Angela Davis. She had become involved with the LA chapter of the Black Panther Party, and as a result of the Jonathan Jackson Rebellion, Angela Davis had become wanted posters of her that were put out, and it was because of the charge of her being the person who had made it affordable for Jonathan Jackson to get a hold of the arms that he was able to get, and it was nothing illegal about it, but the state always looking for closure at some point, they do that even to this day, but so as a result of that, Angela Davis had become wanted, so she had she went underground, she had, disappeared and whatnot. And eventually it was captured. And so there was this movement, this sort of, thing for her. But at some point she had become involved with George Jackson. They developed some type of relationship, whatnot, and, she'd visit, George Jackson. And he had developed, the type of affection for, her being involved in the struggle as a young woman, but she's very conscious of, the things that had been taking place during that time, and today, my understanding at a event this past Saturday, you know, featuring George Jackson. I think Angela Davis was the speaker, and this was out, I believe, out in Oakland, if I'm not mistaken, on this past weekend. You know, we believe that, you know, it was a revolutionary, then you go to your grave as a revolutionary. It is that serious for the love of the people, as Che Guevara said. And you say, you know, what defines a revolutionary is basically, you know, the love for the people, the love for change, the love for a revolution, which means the transformation of society out of the condition that is in the day. You know, for those who listen, I want to remind those who listen, if you want to get in, you know, comment and question, whatever, you know, just press the one on your phone, and we'll try to get you in. We had a late start tonight. You know, we go through things too as people, you know, as human beings and whatnot, you know. But you know, we still here, and but we just wanted to put that in the air. But like I said, and this is you know, we see this shit as a political education platform. We don't get caught up until, you know, just, you know, generalizations, and, you know, this is not you know, other shows, radio talk show, and it's no shade or nothing like that, you know. But we feel that a lot of these shows, radio shows and whatnot, you know, like these individuals have Charlamagne, the God knows other individuals swaying those people, you know, you know. We feel that they have to raise their conscious level, the same way as the rest of us have, or those of us who have, you know, having access to a form of media is crucial in this country, because without the media apparatus, you know, the state couldn't be what it is today. You know, it couldn't function properly. You know, having propaganda, you know, and, you know, there's such things as proper propaganda. See. The Russians were good at that. You know, the Russians were experts in propaganda, psychological war. They've challenged the state, the Americans, in that field. And matter of fact, they've beaten the Americans over the head plenty of times. They may have beaten Americans over the head more than Americans have beat them over the head. But it is what it is. It's any form of communication, you know, where people can listen, read and hear, you know, or whatever, or see, you know. And so a lot of us have these old syndicated shows, whatnot, and we bullshit around. We bullshit around with information. And of course, you know, you have the you know, there's an explanation for it. And like I said, you know, the raising of our collective conscious level. You know, there's some who won't go near it. There's some who won't go near black artists, you know, for fear of retaliation on the part of their handlers in the corporate world, you know, and whatnot. No one you know, there's no strings attached here. We feel even as there's times where we may be speaking for them, you know. You know, some speak under their breath and whatnot, you know. But it is what it is, you know. It is what it is. Even you see BET, you know, and everybody's, I guess, you know, excited. To my understanding, something about Tyler Perry having bought BET, whatever. You know what I'm saying, but you know, that don't mean shit. You know, if you can't collectively, you know, raise the people collectively, kind of don't mean shit. Don't mean shit. You know, and so this is what this is. This is our attempt. This is our place to do it. And now, like I said tonight, you know, Black August is Black History, and we want to familiarize the average Joe and Joanne with it, just as the average Joe and Joanne is familiar with, you know, Black History Month. And as I said, you know, be careful steering or packaging or projection of Black History Month, you know. Even there, you know, the brothers and sisters who are given the spotlight during Black August, you know, pertaining to the prison system, the prison struggle, you know, the on the inside, and what the prison struggle continues to be today. Monster Cody, you know, who's on the West Coast, you know, the media fanfare about gang banging and whatnot and shit like that, you know, the Bloods and the Crips. Monster Cody was an example. He's a present day example of George Jackson. You know, who had become politicized. He had transformed his thought process. He began to understand and realize his place in the structure. In other words, you know, seeing yourself in the matrix, you know, and as opposed to before, you know, I used to learn as an individual, you know, we all learn as individuals, you know, like, you know, we can put things in a particular way and they catch fire, you know, what they call going viral today, you know, Flavor Flav in you know, in the 80s and hip hop. You know, come, you know, he took his, you know, his baseball cap and turned it to the side, and he wore a clock, you know, around his neck, and it shit caught fire, you know. So it's a saying where we're terminizing words through our relationship. You know what I'm saying? It's something that catches hold. This is the, you know, the transformation with Monster Cody. Who is now known today as Sanyika Shakur, you know, and he was, you know, he's jam tight with Tupac. You know, there's a phone conversation for him and Tupac after the attempt on his life with was Quiet Studios, you know, and you hear Monster Cody, you know, saying, "Look, man, no, you know, man, hit me up, you know, I'm net, you know," and he's like, "Look, man, niggas know not to play that shit with me, you know what I'm saying, I'm net." You know what I'm saying? I got your back straight up and real tall. You know, so, you know, this brother, you know, transformed himself like George Jackson did. And I heard this brother say that he was better off as a so-called gang member than he is today when it comes to, you know, firearms, you know, weapons and stuff like that, you know. And he had to put it in a way where, like, you know, you have to laugh. You know what I'm saying? But he was trying to make a point. You know, his whole point of that, because he had become who he is today, you know, and involved with the prison struggle today, you know, and this quiet movement, the liberation struggle, that behind the wall. And even, you know, Jeff Ford, you know, today, even Jeff Ford, some may disagree with Jeff Ford, Tukey Williams, you know, in the prison system, and becoming conscious the way that a George Jackson had become conscious, or to be able to not articulate things, speaking in the manner of H-Rap Brown, or Mumia Abu-Jabbar, or Jamal, or Malcolm X, or Asad Shakur, you know, or Sophia Bakari Alston. You know, we can't forget the sisters, you know what I'm saying? But the fact that these brothers had become, you know, transformed out of one lowly stage into a higher type of man, sort of reminiscent of Francois Nine. We see the transformation of one stage to the next, and that every Black man, whether he like it or not, must realize and understand that he can do, every Black man has a mission to fulfill. You can do one or two things. You know, you can fulfill it or you can betray it. You know, George Jackson had developed the psychology, the spirit that the reality of being the doomed revolutionary at any point or given point of time, he can lose his life in this war, in this protracted war, you know. And people take this for granted. You know, people think, you know, we're speaking in an abstract. And you know, you think you're speaking in an abstract because of the standard orthodox definition of war, you know, being on the battlefield and shit, they show you all the shit on D-Day, you know, they go and do this little song and dance thing, Memorial Day show, you know, they got these war museums, and you go through there and they show you all the footage, you know, and this kind of shit, whatever, stuff like that, you know, yeah, that's a form of war. But there's other forms of war. There's other forms of war. And this is what these brothers and sisters were able to understand. This was what they were able to, you know, to bring across to the streets. Not like in the rural areas. You know, you see where, you know, like Dr. King, you know, Stuart Carmichael, and one of the lesser-known brothers named Willie Ricks. This is actually the elder who gave us, you know, the slogan Black Power. Most of us don't understand. Most of us don't realize that. But, you know, we think of Stokely Carmichael, you know, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael, renamed, re-identified himself as Kwame Ture. And even so is Willie Ricks today, renamed himself due to an infatuation with African pride, history, and culture. You know, the identity, you know, of oneself as an African. You know, Mikasa Dada. So Baba Mikasa, you know, Baba Kwame Ture, and so forth. You know, but it's a transformation that is very possible. And the likes of George Jackson, Sayeka Shakur, they demonstrated it. Even Jeff Ford. Jeff Ford was influenced by Chairman Fred, when he made the Judas and the Black Messiah. That movie wasn't about Fred Hampton. The movie was about William O'Neill, you know, in the show, the present day generation of what it is that we face, galvanizing ourselves around what J. Edgar Hoover referred to as the Black Messiah, you know, the one who can, you know, come and electrify the people. In particular to you. And, you know, he had identified as examples. You know, you name some names. You know, Elijah Muhammad. But he said Elijah Muhammad was old. He mentioned Malcolm X. Malcolm X is the martyr of the movement today. He mentioned Stokely Carmichael. And then he mentioned Dr. King. And, he, you know, but the thing about Dr. King, he said that Dr. King could be this Black Messiah, you know, worry not subscribing to, you know, white liberal views, you know, and so this is J. Edgar Hoover, you know, that even put Malcolm X in some type of, you know, in the context, you know, in the perspective. But it is that understanding, that type of note is there, that today, you know, among us, you know, those of us who some may consider as a modern day Moses, you know, or whatnot, you know, a modern day Malcolm X, a modern day Asajj Shakur, some sister, you know, out in this world who is, you know, has transformed the way she used to think. She could see the world in a much more larger context. Due to what we refer to as the state, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, and the hierarchy that's been set up, that was established from day one. It could have never been something about bringing black people here by force, violence, and somehow, someday, the black people would be let go and that black people could prosper here. That is bullshit. There are some whites who are not prospering. And there's some whites who were just as angry. So there's some whites who were not prospering. And so therefore, you talk about class issues here. You know, the poor whites, the rich whites. You know, there's, you know, how the Marxists, you know, Marxist Leninists. And by the way, this is what, you know, the likes of George Jackson, the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Movement had embraced understanding, you know, getting to know, finding out, you know, the Marxist-Leninist perspective, you know, from a revolutionary point of view, and that capitalism was featured as the bastard child, you know, of America. And America's the bastard child of Western Europe, featuring Britain, the British Empire. And the British is nothing more, Western Europe is nothing more than the bastard child of the Romans. And the Romans are the bastard child of the Greeks, and the Greeks are the bastard children of sheer barbarism. You know, so there's no missing link here. There's no missing link. These things are connected. However, there are those who are coming out of myths and, you know, try to persuade us that these things have nothing to do with what's going on currently today. I actually had a white professor tell me personally, he was from one of those European countries that had been, doing, I guess, well, I don't know what they call it, an instructor at one of the universities. But he had told me personally in the personal conversation I had with him, and he had said that the things that had brewed then is the things that still you could find in the midst of black people today. These are things that still linger today, you know. But we have to make these connections, and it is those who we acknowledge during Black Caucus, those who had become political prisoners, those who had become targets of the state. Not because they stole so much as a pack of non-leaders, or they had committed some terrible crime, even though we may look at George Jackson's gas station robbery. We take crime and put it, place it in a political context, in a political perspective, from a political angle. This is the angle that we, you know, we snatch back the way we think about crime. You know, there's those black-on-black crime, black-on-black violence, you know, and I hear people, you know, from my generation, you know, constantly, you know, it's a damn shame, and man, these youngsters, man, they don't know nothing about that no more, these youngsters, you know, it's constant, you know, these niggas, you know, these niggas in their 50s with the same shit, constantly just going on and going. And sometimes, you know, it make you want to get at them. You know, it make you want to get at them and shit. You know, let me ask you a question, man. You know what I'm saying? You came up, you so you walk a straight line. So you ain't do no dumb shit. You know, literally. But even if he didn't, but it's the same thing over and over and over and over again. So we can look here. We're gonna correct you. We're gonna set you straight. We're gonna set you straight. It's one of the brothers. Who was a political prisoner himself. Man, take me some dynamite cats, man. Man, I appreciate him, you know, to the fullest. I wouldn't trade him for nothing in the world. I would trade him for nothing in the world, the type of understanding they had. You definitely ain't gonna get that shit in no school, not even no college environment, no period. But it is what it is. But black-on-black crime is a necessary political tool to prevent the revolution of the transformation of society. Let me say it again. Black-on-black crime is a necessary political tool to prevent the revolutionary transformation of society. So in other words, what I'm saying is black-on-black crime is manufactured the same way that they manufacture Nike. Black-on-black crime is manufactured the same way that they manufacture Gucci. Black-on-black crime is the same as the way they manufacture a Rolex watch. You know, and so forth and so forth and so forth and so forth. When black-on-black crime is manufactured, the same way they manufacture that new bed that can move and shit, you know, and you know, when you toss and turn, and it you know, it fixes itself to your body shape. You know, it's manufactured. These are manufactured things. These things are synthetic. saying these things are synthetic. And the material conditions lead to concrete realities. So how do you get to the material conditions? How do you get to them? You know, the shit just popped up, it just went Shazam. You know, Europeans don't play that. Europeans, when something go down, when it affects them, Europeans, they pull out their best. They pull out their best psychologists. They pull out their best sociologists to go into it intricately. And by the time they finish, they have convinced the masses of the people that, oh, I see why. I get it. You can take the conditions at one point, and they may still be this way. I don't know. But the conditions at one point in Ireland, the conditions that have created the situation that had become a reality that's manifest in Ireland, due to what? Due to British imperialism, due to British confiscation of the Irish jurisdiction or whatnot. So therefore, affecting the Irish way of life and the conditions that had brewed, the material conditions that had become next, the material conditions that become brutal. And so the brutalness lead to concrete realities. And what are these concrete realities? The concrete realities of what? There was an increase in crime. There was an increase in spousal abuse, rape, theft, robbery, you know, knifings and all this type of shit, you know, alcohol abuse, drug abuse. You know what I'm saying? Whatnot. And this is documented. You know, and so they say, you know, the Irish people have reached a conclusion, too. They do a conclusion that concluded an explanation that explained. And as a result of the British imperialism, as a result of the British confiscation of the Irish way of life, it birthed the Irish Republican Army. So it's an example of Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein. There would be no Irish Republican Army if there was no Dr. Frankenstein. So who's the Dr. Frankenstein? Dr. Frankenstein with a British. It was a British crown. It was a British crown. And so therefore, their Frankenstein had become the IRA. And what happened to Dr. Frankenstein at the end near the movie? You know, he turned on Dr. Frankenstein. And so the IRA, you know, had all of a sudden become terrorists. When they become terrorized first. Same thing in Algeria, the same shits. And this is what separated, H-Rap Brown, George Jackson. We said enough. And of course, this is what lead to taking the prison system, using the prison system as a form of containment on the plantation. Let's see, we got 9 minutes. On the plantation, so-called rebellious slave, you know, the troublemaking slave. After that, there's this thing about rocking the boat. And so there's those who were coming on and instead of wanting to transform the system, you know, demolish the system, as has been written in their own Declaration of Independence. And those are coming on and try to snuff out the rocking the boat mentality and replacing that with rocking the vote, you know, to subvert it. And these are attempts. That's a conscious attempt. There's nothing coincidental about that. There's nothing coincidental about that, period. Nothing coincidental about it. But it's just these things that have come, sort of rebellious slave, you know. So what did they do to come up with the concept? So, well, all right, they got the concept of buck breaking, you know, being tied to the rack. And in a sense, you know, this is portrayed in the series Roots. You know, Alex Haley, who had wrote, you know, the book Roots, and of course, you know, he the one who sat down with Malcolm, and Malcolm gave, you know, the skinny on everything, and he was able to write an autobiography of Malcolm X and whatnot. And I recommend any brother or sister to read the autobiography of Malcolm X. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just straight from the horse's mouth. You see what I'm saying? But, you know, he portrayed that in the movie Roots, where they show Kunta Kinte, he's a rebellious one, you know, the time, and then you whip him. You ask him, you say Kunta Kinte. You whip him some more. And he still said Kunta Kinte. And then he whipped him again. His voice got a little more fanny, you know, Kunta Kinte. you know, and he whipped him some more, and he called, can't tell you, you know, and then he whipped him some more, and then, you know, law of nature says that any physical contact, you know, whatnot, after a certain point of time, begins to take a toll. Now, you know, and it may not be all the time, you know what I'm saying, but, you know, it's something that will occur. And so, you know, this is what's being portrayed in Rules, where he finally got him to say Toby, you know, in the movie. And so that was conquering him. The white man conquered him. So that stroked the white man ego. That made the white man feel like, you know, he the man and whatnot, stuff like that. But he had to use violence to do it. He had to use violence to pull this shit off. You know what I'm saying? And so from the plantation to the so-called prison system, to, you know, the concentration camp, you know, from the 60s to today, the so-called prison pipeline, you know, by design, and none of that's coincidental, and ain't but one source of factor that we can turn to explain. You know, what's the predicate? You know, the system of capitalism. And what is designed for? What is the objective? What is its goal? And as I said, you know, some may know this is 1%. And there's even these whites. There's even these whites who where they show, you know, Occupy Wall Street movement, you know, where the pigs had become violent with them, you know. This would have been China during that time. The media would have seized the time. And they would have used that as a golden opportunity to paint China as a dictatorship, as a regime, as totalitarianism, as authoritarianism, that what they're doing to people dying there is repugnant. You know, it has no place in the world, and that the people need democracy. You know. And again, it is because of those brothers and sisters who struggled in the 60s, came out in the 70s, and that gave Black August what it is that they have put their stamp in the month of Black August. And one other thing I want to mention, you know, the Attica uprising, you know, as a result of George Jackson, of the murder of George Jackson. And this is how effective George Jackson was around in the prison system throughout decadent America. You know what I'm saying? It's a history, as I said, you know, that our youth is their right to it. The Europeans make their movies and whatnot and their celebrations that come to the 4th of July. And what is the 4th of July? Basically, rebellion, you know, rebelliousness, and those that have presented before us in the history class, in the textbook or in the classroom, quoting Patrick Henry, you know, who stood before the what would be a sort of like a gathering, a town hall meeting of you know, those who were like the Senate and whatnot, you know, in the down in the House of Representatives speaking before you people, and he ended his motivational speech, you know, ended his motivational speech by saying, give me liberty or give me death. It is reminds me of George Jackson. He said, although they may push me out of existence, they'll never be able to say or count me among the broken. You know, they have their Patrick Henry. They got their Donald Trump, and they even have their Joe Biden. And there would be no Malcolm X without a Governor Wallace. There would have been no George Jackson without the pig. You know, without the rich white ruling class families, you know, some of whom he named, you know, the Rockefellers and so forth, the DuPonts, you know, these families who have lived high off the hog, you know, at the exploitation of others, and speaking in particularly black people. We reached the, you know, tonight's show. You know, we'll go to the end. You know, we you know, we normally, you know, when we go out, you know, with a bang, with a, with, you know, some music or whatnot, you know. But it's going to go, you know, all the way to the end. So we get cut off, it is what it is, you know, down to the last second, you know. But, you know, we'll say, you know, stay tuned next week, you know, for another show. People's Political Party, In Defense of People Radio, you know, and like I said, you know, this is a, you know, platform we, you know, attempt to use to politicize and politically educate our people, and we welcome those who listen, you know, question, comments, what have you, whatnot, you know, get in, this is what it's all about, you know, some refer to it as dialogue. You know, and we can go with that, you know, with no problem at all. You know what I'm saying? But you know, we ain't gonna tolerate no bullshit though. We feel that we on the right side of history, you know, that continue the legacy of a George Jackson, you know, Jonathan Jackson. Our youth, you know, should know who Jonathan Jackson is. You know, the way that they're being set up continuously out here in these occupied colonies. And what do we mean by occupied colonies? You know, occupied by the police, and what is the police but an extension or arm of the state? I mean, this is the first line of defense, you know, to serve as the buffer for those who are at the top of the pyramid. You know, those who continue to exploit, not only here but around the world, in which, you know, as I touched on some, which has moved oppressed peoples in a revolutionary way. Things have gotten exhausted with all the bureaucracy, with all the red tape, with all the rhetoric on the part of those who claim that they're bringing democracy to the undeveloped world or the so-called developing world, you know, as though black people in Africa weren't developing, and that when the white man came, we started developing, you know, that we didn't have any type of understanding of you know, what progress was, that we didn't know what civilization was, that we didn't understand what the political economy was, that we were just sitting there, you know, with bones in our noses and chucking spears, you know, with some loincloth covering our private parts, you know, so much so that Hollywood brought in this character called Tarzan. And then Tarzan was so bad that Tarzan could fight the lion that 10 Africans was fleeing from. That type of shit there, that type of propaganda. You know? But yes, that too around the world. And the effects of the political movement here had effects around the world in Southern Africa. There's no country called South Africa. that is some synthetic thing that has been fabricated on the part of the white imperialist faction that had landed on the shores of Africa in the 17th century, you know, in the 18th century, you know, the so-called